Three of them. Okay, let's go. One of them. Okay, this was Parsis Kisovo, which is interesting. Why do I say it's interesting? Because every part of the Torah is interesting, of course, but it was a tikkun that Ezra made. You know, what was the tikkun Ezra made? There are two times in the Chumash, in the Parsha, Gemara Binyamin, where the Tochacha. The Tochacha appears in Chukosai, and also appears in where? Kisavo, in our Parsha. And Ezra made a Takana that these Tochacha must be read before Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah. So we read the Chukosai always before Shavuos, and we read Kisavo before Rosh Hashanah in order to what? Instill Musar in us.
2 weeks now.
What do you mean 2 weeks?
Why not next Shabbos?
It doesn't have to be directly before, but just be read before, because you know the Gemara has a concept, you know, of like there's a new year that begins after Shavuos in the for agriculture, and there's a new year that begins for us, you know, at Yom HaDin. So you want to instill in us Musar. So you know the Gemara has a phrase in the end of Rosh Hashanah. It says Tikl Shana the Kilo Seha. Let the year finish and its curses. V'tachel shana u'birkoseha. Let the year begin anew with its brachas. That's clearly seen in this concept of reading the Tochacha. So I want to focus a little bit on this concept of the Tochacha and speak about it a little bit. You know, the minig is that whoever is the Baal Kori gets the Aliyah from the Tochacha. There were actual fights that broke out, unfortunately, years ago in shuls in Europe, that no one wanted to get the Aliyah of the Tochacha to the degree they would even skip it. Can you imagine that? Obviously, that's not correct. You're supposed to read it. And the minig is that not to insult anyone so that the Baal Kori gets the Aliyah. Because by giving someone the Aliyah, are you saying that guy should get all these flawless? God forbid, but that's how the minhag developed, that the Baal Kori takes the Aliyah himself. And it should be read a little bit faster and a little bit quieter, but not to the degree you can't hear it. And it used to be read in that manner also, which is not right. You want to be educated as a poet, of course. You know, to hear a Musar, you need to be able to hear it at least, right? So let's try to compare the two Tochachos, see what we come up with, okay? Very kedai always to do that. And it contains, you know, obviously terrifying curses and punishments that will befall anybody who defiantly elects to violate the Torah's commandments. It's interesting to note that this is not the first parsha that contains a lengthy review. We had it in Parsha's Book of Kosai. So let's raise two kashas, okay? Number one, why was there a need to repeat the threats after they're described already in gruesome detail where in Parsha's Book of Kosai? Let's get this down, guys. Let's get this down, although maybe you'll remember it. The first kasha is, why need to repeat it? Yes? Number two, further, why don't the terrible curses described in Parsha's Kisavo and our Parsha conclude with words of consolation like it does in the Bukosai? Did you know in the Bukosai in Perek Chavav, Pusk Mendalit and Memhei, it concludes with words of Nechama? Here you don't find it. So we got the two kashas. Number one is why the need to repeat the concept of Tochacha. And number two, why in the end of the Bukosai do you have this words of consolation here? Not. You got it? Those two kashas. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh answers, or the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, the great in the Mikros Kadosh Beit Gadol, answers by noting that the curses detailed in Kukosa are written in the plural. And in our parsha, they're expressed in what? The singular. The Kukosai Lashon Rabim, here Lashon Yachid. So what's the difference? So he suggests the following, very powerful, that the punishments mentioned previously are national in nature, and will only transpire if the entire nation engages in inappropriate activities. For this reason, they're written in the plural, Rabim, right? But Parsha's Kisavo, our parsha, on the other hand, is expressed in the singular, as it addresses individuals who sin, even at a time when the nation as a whole is behaving properly. And that fits in with the theme of Rosh Hashanah, because we're judged as who? As a chidin. That's why you always want to latch up with the seaboard, because you don't want your deeds to be examined in the vacuum. But the bottom line is, it's an individual judgment that Hashem judges by Hashem. So with this chidin, you can now plug it in, the following. The tochacha that was contained in Parshas Bukhosai ends with words of encouragement. Why? Because it pertains to the entire nation. No matter how they might stray, Hashem says, you're the Am HaNivchar. You, the Jewish people, are the chosen people. No matter how far you stray. Because your continued existence in the source of Hashem's covenant with our forefathers. Each individual within the community, however, is not as fortunate. In Parshas Kitavo discusses the case of the individual who sins, it doesn't conclude with the words of consolation, because they don't have any assurance, because you're a yachid. And the author of Kelm, so now it answers both kashas, right? Why was it needed to repeat it? Well, it wasn't repeated. Because the first one was for the seaboard as a whole, the second one was for who? Yachidim. Number two, it answers the second kasha, because why? The first one has words of consolation because it's to the tzibor. Hashem will always treat us as the Am HaNivchar. Whereas what? Whereas when it comes to the individuals, there is no words of nechama, because who says that there will be? If it got so bad, God forbid. So the author of Kelm, the great Gadol, uses this concept to resolve an apparent sphira regarding the nature of Rosh Hashanah. On one hand, it's legally considered to be a festive day. It's a yontif. We dress in fine clothes. We have seudas. We don't say halal, because the Gemara says in Erkin Daf Yud, Yemei Chayim, Yemei Meis, Sifre Chayim, Sifre Meis, and you're talking about Kemal and Shira? Hakidis, Hashem says in Lach, you're saying Shira when the Book of Life and Death are open? You know what I mean? It's a little bit toned down, simple. That's why we'll talk about next week. We'll get to more of it in Shabbat and Rosh Hashanah, but you're not supposed to eat to your heart's desire on Rosh Hashanah. You normally eat four helpings, you only eat two. Normally, you eat two, eat one. You tone it down a little bit. The Chabad says, well, yochol kol sovra. Should not eat to your heart's desire. That's why we don't say halakha, it's toned down. Some of Rishonim actually said you can fast on Rosh Hashanah. We don't hold like that with you. But on the other day, the day is solemn. Towels not recited due to fear and trembling, and accompany the knowledge of the books of life and death open on this day. So the author is Masber, that as a nation, we are confident in Hashem's mercy and conduct ourselves with joy and optimism. At the same time, each individual is filled with dread and terror at the recognition that he has no such guarantee. So that really speaks to the dialectic of the day. You know what I mean by a dialectic? It's like a mix of two things. Because on one hand, it is a moed, it isn't a simple, that's focusing on the tzibor, fine clothes, suda. But on the other hand, as individuals, we're very, very the terror and dread. So therefore, it's toned down. We don't eat to our heart's desire, we don't say holla. So you want to say that's how it expresses itself in Rosh Hashanah. It's interesting. And as the day of judgment approaches, this message should inspire us. If we isolate ourselves and live on our own, we face the frightening prospect of soon being judged on our own merits. On the other hand, the author teaches that if we attach ourselves to the broader community, we will be judged together with them and will benefit from their communal mitzvahs. In this merit, we should all be inscribed and sealed for a year of life, success, good health, and spiritual growth. It's a beautiful board, no? You got this Kiddush? Okay, that's the first Mahalik that I wanted to point out. Now, I want to add on to this a little bit, okay? I want to add on a little bit to this. And that is the following. There is a comment from Rav Agon, Rav Kanievsky, Zatzal. He comments, we're putting it all together with your guy's schutz. In the brachas contained in the beginning of our Sukkot Kosai, those who observe the mitzvahs, no mention is made of wealth and material success. If you look in the Kukosai, no mention of wealth and material success is mentioned. Yes? Where are those referred to in our parsha of wealth and material success? What's the reason for that feeling? So we're pointing out basically a third feeling. One was why it was repeated. Two, why is it Lashon Rabbah and here Lashon Yochid? And three, why is wealth and material success mentioned over there and not here? So, the time for the Eshi in the Sefer Tama Dekra cites Rashi in Vayikra, whose lives with the parsha of the Kosai is addressed to those who toil in the study of Torah. For them, wealth would be an unwanted distraction from their spiritual pursuits. And the greatest blessing of all is that their basic physical needs will be provided for, and that they'll be free to study Torah. To them, $1 million is not a big deal. Parsha Tzavo, on the other hand, is addressed to all of the Jews who observe mitzvahs, not just Lomdei Torah. And on their level, they consider material success to be a great bracha. This is a story that, you know, it says in Ramah that if you're a sandik, it's a skula for wealth. Because sandik, the sandakos, is compared to the kotos. And whoever got the Thursday coin became wealthy. That's why there's a minute that a family shouldn't ask the same guy to do the sandik for more than one baby. Okay? So, Lamaisa, this guy was assigned for on Monday and asked other Rabbanim because he had other sons. So now it was my turn. That's what he said. Okay? So the stipend was assigned with many times. They asked the Rebbe, where's the wealth? Where's the wealth? He said, wealth doesn't have to be in your bank account. And how many homes or cars are there? Wealth is in the Sfarim. And the Sfarim are very popular in the old machines, Kibitzako. Well, that's one version of the story I heard. The other version I heard is his wealth is his son, the Chaim Kanievsky. That's his wealth. So whichever version you want to go with, they're both good. And that's regarding the two. I want you to get it, make sure that you remember it, and have a B'kiyah Sinek. You should have a B'kiyah Sinek on the stoop, knowing where Dinam are and which parsha, knowing right off the bat that the Tochach is in, with the Kosai and the Sobo. You want to be a Yodea Sefer in this. Very, very important. Okay. Now, I speak about this. I haven't spoken about it a lot this year, but I have been upcoming the Sefer. I still got to give you guys some good things. Speak about a curse I told. The first saved in 2011 by Yosef Dovid, in the memory of my father-in-law. I want to write another one in memory of my parents. It's very hard to find time to write this. Well, the wife said, in the ad hoc I write about the importance of a curse of hope. I show gratitude. So be appreciative guys. I write in there, I believe, the Vinyan Av of all Midos. All Midos folks. A guy who's not appreciative and gratitude, you know, how can you be a good guy? You can't be humble, you can't be kind. So you have that, go walk around and everything's coming to you. You deserve everything. You're a microphone for everything. You're able to encourage your friends, you say thank you. You readily can be appreciative. And the source of Akaras Hatov really is in our parsha. Bikurim is really the source of Akaras Hatov. You come forward, he says, Hashem, he gave me the land, the farmer says, he gave me the land, it's all from you. And you do it with a loud voice, not Nisa Bamarka. You do it with a real loud voice. A real loud voice, not Nisa Bamarka. I saw Shachar Bamarka, Rav Yoda Goldberg, the oldest son. He's a Rebbe in there. It's a show he runs the Smith's Hover program, the great gun. Some of the halachas that we all the love that you do sometimes to me is just one sweetest number. It's you. So, he said he heard a beautiful parterre from a friend of his, Rav Nussbaum. I don't know who it is. He said a very beautiful parterre. It says Vanisa in the Parsha. It's only the third time in the Torah it says Vanisa. Where the first two times? A few parshas ago when it said what? When the Chachamim said Vayelech said Vanisa, we didn't do it. And also it said last week's Parsha by the Chalitza. You know, Anu, and they say this guy, she says that this guy doesn't want to keep, the brother doesn't want to keep the legacy alive of the dead brother. And that's when they do Chalitza. Rashi says in this week's Parsha, Vanisa, the farmer comes in and he says Vanisa in a loud voice. Why does Rashi wait till here to say loud voice? Why didn't he say it earlier in those other two times? Well, there's a great question, no? Why does he wait till this Parsha say Vanisa in a loud voice? He said like this. I thought it was a beautiful shot. Of course the Chachamim are going to say in a loud voice, we're not the murderers of this guy you found between the two cities. Rashi doesn't need to say it there. And by the Chalitza, of course she's going to say it. She's upset. She wants her brother-in-law to marry her to keep alive her dead brother's, dead husband's legacy, which is his brother. She's going to say it loudly. This guy's not doing it. But when it comes to thanking, even Hashem, he said it quietly. Oh, I'm such a great farmer, you know. I hope you got to know me. I know how to do the things, you know what I mean? I'm such a great business guy, you know, and everything. I mean, that was a fellow I'm sure who was very successful hedge fund. Now he retired, and he's learning in Coil last 2-3 years. And he once told me that whole field is all Tziach and Shemai. He says there are guys there, he remembers are such fallen guys, he said people are such geniuses. They happen to have Tziach and Shemai on the choice of how to invest something. And then the next year they go bust it. Like they think they're brilliant. The field is all based on Tziach and Shemai. Certain fields, everything is based on Tziach and Shemai. Certain fields maybe are required, so we go to talk about it. We need to stop this. But he said that field is special. So, you know what I mean? This guy's so successful in his farm, you have to bring the first fruits. What are the first fruits? The corn is over 63 seconds. 40 seconds a minute. What is the favor of Hashem? You need to say it with a full throat, very loud, that you are thankful to Hashem, and Hashem is the one who did it, not you. That's why Rashi waits till here to say it. It's a beautiful word, no? I thought it was very powerful. You know what I mean? Don't finish. I thought it was very powerful word. So in the Parsha of Bikurim, which Hebrew letter does not appear? There's only one Hebrew letter in the whole alphabet. How many letters are there in the Hebrew alphabet? 22. And the American English is 26, I believe, yes? And how the phase has been used. The Gemara says we don't say Ashrei with the Nun. You know, we skip the Nun. So there's a Cheshivas from the alphabet. Hashem gave us that as well. Everything. So which letter doesn't appear in Bikurim, do you know? And why? Which letter is missing? What'd you say? Samet. The Samet is what's missing. So the Balaturim points out that this section contains every letter except for the Samet. This alludes to a Gemara in Kulin, that Kuklam and Zion of the Bay, that although there's no minimum biblical amount that a farmer is required to bring to fulfill the obligation of Bikurim, from its food should bring at least 1/60th of his harvest. This is alluded to by the absence of the letter Samet, which has a numerical value of 60. Additionally, the Torah uses an unusual word when instructing the farmer to bring the first fruits in the basket. What word? Tena, to the Kohen. What is the gematria of Tena? 60. The numerical value of the word Tena is 60. So, do you have any thoughts to add on to that? The Samet is missing because why? I want to say a word. I want to say a Kiddush. When it comes to Akar Satov, don't ever aim for the minimum. And that is highlighted by the fact that the Torah omits the Samech, which is the minimum shear of Bikurim that a guy should bring. Minat Torah, otherwise you should bring a kosher. But at least you should bring a 60. But you know why the Torah omits it? The Torah omits it because when it comes to Akar Satov, which is the theme of Bikurim, don't aim for the minimum, aim for the maximum. And that's highlighted by the basket. The basket. Do you guys need a basket to hold one fruit? You need a basket to hold. I was just bringing in lunch for myself. And I had a salad and a nice piece of fruit of fish, looking forward to lunch, and it drops on the floor. Right? It was in a basket. You need a basket to hold a lot of stuff, right? It's in a plastic thing. Right? You don't need a basket for one thing. So the Torah omits the Sama. Don't aim for the minimum when it comes to our heart. And at the same time, try to maximize it as much. And instead of what the Sama, it has the word basket, which is highlights have a lot of the fruit in order to what? Try to what? You know, be very, very appreciative of things when people do something for you. Be appreciative. Say it with sincerity and authenticity. I'd say it in a real way, because you know what it is, in essence? I want to tell you, and let's build this up a little bit. And then we'll stop 9:30 because we got to get through the crisis. Have you ever thought about what the Hebrew word for a Jew is? I was called, you know, when I was a little boy, you know, Hebrew, when I played in baseball, and one of them used to call me Hebrew. One of the best guys in the team used to call me Hebrew. I couldn't say anything. I couldn't find him anyways. Oh, he beat me up. But the mice said, well, Hebrew, because he used to go to church Sunday morning. So I guess in the Old and New Testament, there's references to the Hebrews, which is us, the Yiddish, Hebrew. But, you know, I know all the names, you know, people. Dirty Yiddish, I don't need to tell you all the names. Bagel Boy, I can give you all the phrases, right? But the mice said, you know what the Hebrew word for a Jew is? Yehudi. A Yehudi? Yehudi? It's in Arabs. You know, the whole name for Jews is Yehudi. Even they don't know it, no? They say Yehudi, no? And they want to say a Jew, they say Yehudi. I've heard them say it. What does that mean, Yehudi? You know what it means? It means thank. Hodah. It really means also to admit, to acknowledge. But when you thank, you're admitting and acknowledging, aren't you? If someone helped you, that's what you're doing when you thank. That's the essence of the Yid. So interesting that the name of the Yid means this. I mean, if you walk around like being an ingrate, and you think everything's coming to you, and you don't say the word thank you, you're not living as a Jew. That's what it's meaning. It's a movie. The Gemara says it also means also denying of what is art. You believe in Hashem, you thank Hashem. But that's your essence. Upon Oded, right, when she had Leah, right? When Leah had Yehuda. She was always supposed to have three, then when she had Yehuda, it was an addition. She was very happy. This is very important advice. So I'd like to share with you a few Yehushim about our Parsha Torah, okay? One already we just shared, and that is, that you should say it in a loud voice. Number two is what? Aim for who? For what? The maximum. What's number three? That's the essence of a Yid. Yes? Three suggestions you said already about a person. I thought of a fourth one last week, a new one. A new leg in the concept of a person. Did you notice last week that one of the victims of the 70 mitzvahs was? Don't you despise a mitzvah, says. Because you can marry them on the third generation on if they convert. First two not, but third on. And why? Because Rashi says, what does Rashi say? Because they hosted us when we had nowhere to go and there was a famine. Now guys, that nation later developed into wanting to kill us and drive us into the sea and destroy us from the face of the earth, yes? Don't you think I wouldn't have to be mocked or told anyone in Israel? No, that's not true. Because Hashem says, look back at the history. If you look back at the history, they opened their place when there was a famine. Hashem says, I know it developed terribly when they were trying to kill us. But the bottom line is that you cannot forget it. You know, you heard on the radio a lot this past week, you never forget 9/11. You never forget a mullet. That theme is very, very, very recognizable across the entire. But Tim says, Sefer HaMelech and Lo Tishkach. Don't forget. You know that. Also, you don't forget this, that they helped us. And that's why after the third generation, you're able to what? You're able to what? Marry them. What does it say, though, about Ammon and Moab? Nothing, no. What does it say in Ammon and Moab? You're not allowed to marry them at all, right? Even if they convert. A man that converts from Ammon and Moab is off limits. We never can marry them. Because they were mean to us. And even though did help out Avram, but that was as an individual. You know, he became the father of the nation of Ammon and Moab, right? But the bottom line is that was as an individual. Here the nation of Israel did what opened their homes to us under Pharaoh's leadership. Whether it was a new man or older, a new kid or not, the bottom line is there's a new Jewish by a person. If you have a nation that tried to kill us, but they were once good to us, they're once good to us. I don't know. I'm trying to think at a modern level how that was. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Germany was ever good to the Jews. So I don't know if that would apply. Okay? But the bottom line is that the bottom line is that I'm trying to bring out this image in front of you.
What about Poland? Yeah. They wanted another
commonwealth.
In
history?
In World War I, you mean?
No, before that.
Even before that.
They
got kicked out of Germany and didn't have any place to go. And then Poland.
Maybe that would apply.
It's like Poland, this is like the place we're
going to
stay until we go back to...
Maybe that would apply, then you cannot forget about the way that they helped us. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, let's close. This is good. I never knew that. That's the word Pauline.
They used it as like
in English, the English phrase. About how Rav Avon Rav Kushner Zatzal. He was the only time in Vilna with time older, and an 18 years of time. That's 6 months before the Nazis came in and planted to Vilna. He went out with time older, they took walks together talking and learning. And right in the middle of the learning, he would say, see that plant? That's poisonous. See this other plant? That's good to eat. The berries. How beautiful this tree is. Every 5 minutes, he interrupts it. Which one's good, which one's not. So, also, when the Nazis actually came into Nola, the bushman hid in the bushes for 8 hours. They didn't find him. So when he came to America and then out the eye, he started Yeshiva Balance, he saw the Pope of Bond in Kavya. He was from Yeshiva, I used to learn there in Ashmanim a lot. He would water the bushes, he was holding the tree. And the Kavya said, Rebbe, let us do it. He says, no. I have a curse, I call for bushes. On two occasions, because I ran in a forest for 2 years from the Nazis, and I ate berries for 2 years. How did I know which berries? The prime minister. Now we knew out of prime minister knew that he had a new Hakadosh natural farm. He knew which berries to eat, and number two, he was able to hide the berries. So he had a curse spoke even to an animal object. And that's why he watered the bushes. That's another finish of feedback curse spoke, which all starts from what the Buddha Okay, let's break here. Here's Carmel Kindness. Let's get going, guys. If you have questions on the crisis, please ask me. Go over to Barashi.